Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and for many years I did live radio. Then I transitioned to the podcast world where I feel I found my home. I love talking about spiritual formation, justice issues, and spiritual practices. Throw in the Enneagram, movies, and current events from time to time, and that's what you get on the podcast. I'm glad you've come along for the ride. Welcome to Faith Conversations. Welcome to Faith Conversations, everyone. I am so excited that you're with me today for a lot of reasons. One, I am thrilled to have Leanna Tankersley back on the podcast. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What is that? No, it's not my phone. It's the lamest excuse for a celebratory sound because today the podcast is 6 years old. I'm shocked. So Leanna, welcome. You're on the 6 year anniversary.
This is so cool. Thank you so much for having me. And it's like a special occasion. Like, are we partying? This is so great. Congratulations, Anita. Oh my gosh. Thank you.
And actually, I'm amazed that I can remember, but I remember who the very first guest was. And I don't know if you know her, Beth Burham from Fall Creek Abbey. She and her husband have a retreat center outside in Indianapolis. And they are both spiritual directors and they run a school for spiritual direction. So all that's near and dear to my heart as a spiritual director. And they're just great folks. I've written some amazing books. So Beth Burham was the first guest. I just thought of that. And now 6 years in, Leanna, you're back on the podcast with me. So thanks for helping me celebrate mini celebration.
It is my pleasure. 6 years is no small thing, my friend. No small thing.
I'm happy to be alive. So there you go. And honestly, a lot of us feel that way right now. Right?
I hear you.
The way the world is, we're all happy to be still standing.
We're not taking anything for granted these days.
No. Yep. So let me just purposefully introduce you here. Leanna is the author of 6 books, and I really wanted to go back and introduce her properly because I have loved her books. Breathing Room, highly recommend. Brazen, you want to find your voice? Read Brazen. Begin Again, tremendous. And I really found her again when with the release of Always We Begin Again, which is a daily devotional. I don't know what you call it. It is fantastic. The questions that you ask at the end of every day are wonderful. She is a queen of good questions, and that is not easy. Really thoughtful questions. So I've recommended that and given that as a gift. And today, super excited to talk with you about your new book, Hope Anyway. Welcoming possibility in ourselves, God, and each other.
Yes.
And that just the title is hope producing. And I'm really, really grateful for that. And I thought a good place for us to start, actually, Leanna, you know, I'm a spiritual director and I've been using this poem to open spiritual direction sessions for the past several weeks with clients. It's called Sometimes You Have to Break Things, and it's written by Meister Eckhart, a mystic from the 1200s and early 1300s. And it reads this way. It's true. Sometimes you have to break things if you want to grasp God in them. In the breaking, we allow what's holy to take form in us. Amen.
Amen.
And there's been a lot of breaking in the past year and a half, two years, right? There's been a lot of that. People listening know exactly what we're talking about with that.
Yeah. The breaking of our hearts at times, the breaking of our sense of maybe peace or equilibrium, the breaking of our certainty, the breaking of you name it. It can be literal. It can be figurative.
The breaking of our health,
our social fabric.
Yes.
And I love those beautiful words because it is a theology of hope that it can be in the breaking that love comes in, that the holy sacred thing happens. And often, which is what is terrible news, when everything's perfectly intact, sometimes there isn't space for the holy thing to happen. We're sort of cruising.
Yes.
So well, thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, yes. Thanks, Meister Eckhart. I'm grateful. A former guest just a few weeks ago, John Sweeney, we talked about Thomas Merton, and I found out that he had written some books and done some translation work of some poems of Meister Eckhart's. But, you know, I speaking of the breaking of, and you fill in the blank, that's a part of your story. That's really a part of your book, Hope Anyway, right?
Yeah, right. So about, it's now been about 4 years ago, as the book chronicles, and as I wrote the book, it was about 3 years ago, I found out very unexpectedly that my marriage was ending. And, you know, I always caveat that with, no, we didn't have a perfect marriage. No, you know, none of those things, but it was very unexpected how this all happened and how it all just sort of abruptly ended. And that's a real breaking. It's a breaking on so many levels of your family fabric, of your expectations for the future, of your sense of security, of what you thought, how you thought your kids were going to grow up. I have three kids. They're now 12, 12, and nine. And you know, at the time they were very young. And so this was an extreme and abrupt and acute breaking. And so I started writing during that time. I didn't even tell really anyone publicly for an entire year that this was going on because it was just so emotionally chaotic. But during that time I started writing and I just started thinking about, and I think this represents the human story so much, you know, there, we just can't always control outcomes in our lives. I know you understand that too, Anita. And it's like, so what do we do when we don't get the outcome we have been praying for, hoping for, thought we were owed, thought we deserved, thought we had nurtured and all of that, you know, what happens? And the thing that I felt inside of me was this kind of like fiery resilience. And part of this maybe was being a mother, I don't know, but there was this whisper inside of me that was like, Leanna, this will not be the end of you. There is an option for you to rise out of this. And so, you know, that didn't come on day one, but that arrived over time. And so, yes, I believe that, I believe in the theology of breaking, even though I don't like it. We have that model in Christ himself.
Right.
And yeah.
Well, and I'm thinking about you also very much believe in the theology of hope.
Yes.
I love the fact in Hope Anyway that you start every chapter, I mean, every chapter title starts with the word hope, you know, hope in the darkness anyway, hope in letting go anyway, hope in rebuilding anyway, you know, hope in reality anyway. I jumped right to a particular chapter that I shared some things from with a friend from Hope in the Wilderness Anyway.
Yeah.
And I sat with some things from that particular chapter at one point. And if we, boy, if ever we needed hope, it is right now. It's in the middle of, and I won't say maybe not middle of, maybe I don't even know if we can say toward the end of the pandemic. I don't know what we can say.
We don't know. We don't know where we are, do we? Which is scary. It's hard to be in that unknown. Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the distinctions that I make in the book is the difference between hoping for and hoping in. And I think what's hard is that we feel like, well, if I don't get the outcome that I was hoping for, then what place does hope have in my life? It's kind of confusing. But yet I think we all know that being cynics isn't really the posture we want to go through life in either, that hope is a healthy thing to be holding in our lives and in our hearts. So I try to parse this out in the book that, that a lot of times we think of hope as this thing we're hoping for, like an outcome or a product. And what I was trying to parse out and reiterate in the book is that what happened to me is that I didn't get the outcome I wanted. I didn't get the outcome I was praying for. I didn't get the outcome that I felt like I had nurtured and nourished, but that didn't mean that I couldn't invest hope in a lot of places in my life and it really hold. And so I try to talk about, these are all these 27 different things you can invest your hope in, and they may seem counterintuitive. They may seem like not real sexy. I don't want to hope in the wilderness.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to hope in the breaking open. Who wants to do that? Mm-hmm. But it is where strangely and beautifully we are met.
You know, one of the strange, I like that, strangely and beautifully we are met. That's well said. One of the things that I really appreciate you, I said earlier, I was kind of joking, but not at all, that you are the queen of the question. You end every one of these chapters, hope in, you know, in all the different ways, with a question. You know, it says holding hope, and then whatever the chapter, you have a, generally a single question at the end, which might be about all we can sit with these days, one question.
Yes. Right.
And thank you for that.
I tried to keep the chapter short for that same reason too. We don't have focus right now. I don't have focus right now. We don't have, you know, a lot of the resources that maybe we once had at our disposal. And so I tried to keep the chapters very short. And then I put one question at the end, and they typically start with, God, what do you want to say to me about? And then I kind of fill the rest of that in with whatever the chapter was about. And this is a spiritual practice that I've done for years now, is I wake up in the morning and I'll write on the top of my paper, you know, God, what do you want to say to me today? Or what do you want to say to me about this particular struggle I'm having with a child, or this particular question? And what it is it's prompting me to develop a practice of listening.
Ah, yes.
And so then I just sort of keep track of the dialogue. And so what I wanted to do for the reader is invite them into that practice as much as they wanted to go, as much as they could, on the chapters that made sense for them, sit down and interact with that question and begin the discipline and spiritual practice of listening. It's been life-changing for me.
So I don't want to just throw out several things. One, spiritual practice of listening. I have been leading a Lexio Divina group for our church. It's on Zoom Wednesday mornings. And my pastor, good friend and associate pastor at the church, is part of that every week. And she said to me this week, she goes, I think this might've been the best ever. I said, well, we feel that way a lot, but I'll tell you what I do really feel. I feel like my listening has improved.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm hearing the voice of the Holy Spirit, maybe more quickly or easily or something, you know, in that vein. And how beautiful is that? And because of that, my hunger for reading the word and what the word can say to me individually and to the others in the group individually has, it's just been such a beautiful practice. So I love that you have these questions, and specifically, you know, you're listening.
Yeah.
God, what do you want to say to me about, you fill in the blank. And that also leads me to mention this, that I've gotten your newsletter or whatever you call it. What do you call it that you send out? From your website. I've received that for a number of years now, and I will put a link certainly in the show notes to the podcast for your website, which is just simply your name, right?
LeannaTankersley.com. You got it.
Mm-hmm. So for those that are, you know, riding a car or whatever, and can't remember, you can go to the show notes. And I highly encourage you to sign up for that. I love that right now you've been asking questions, which goes along with the book, but they've been such good questions. And I just wanted to highlight that as well.
Thank you. Yeah, questions are a big deal for me. I'm a curious person by nature. And yeah, so every Sunday I send out an email, Sunday-ish, let's say, and it asks a single question to help kind of inform your week or to give you, you know, just sometimes we want to be reflective, we want to be intentional, we want to be present, but we sort of need some help. And so I try to offer a question that can create some of that for people, a little structure if they want. And I just agree that when you develop this practice of listening, it gives you a hunger for more. And I think one of the reasons is because, you know, the still small voice of God is not the loudest, most obnoxious voice in our ear. Sometimes that's the voice of shame or the soul bullies or those toxic tapes. And so I think our nervous system, our bodies, our minds, our hearts have to drop down into this other wavelength to be able to really hear those sacred words, that voice of love. And I think our system craves that. I think it just, once we get a taste of it, it takes time and energy and intention to do that, to drop down into that other wavelength. But once we do, I think we just crave it because we were made for that. We were made for that kind of communion, right?
Absolutely. Something else that I wanted to mention too, and I don't think I told you this, but I listened to your book. I was going to say,
I
listened to your book via audio. Yes, I read your book via audio. And I've been doing that a lot lately as I go out and walk. And because I used to ride my bike and I haven't been able to do that in the healing process, but walking I can do. And I loved listening to it because you read the book.
That's right. Yes.
Authors don't always read it. I love it when the author reads the book.
Yeah. And I love that too.
Yeah. So thank you for that. And, and it's I just want to encourage people, you know, every once in a while I run into people who say, you know, I'm really not a reader. Try listening to books, get audio books. And I so enjoyed this via audio.
It's a great suggestion too. Yeah. And I agree. It can remove some barriers that we have sometimes with reading. So that's a great suggestion.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about some of the chapters that maybe seem a little incongruent, or I don't know you know, like hope in loss anyway, really, or I'm looking, there are a couple of them. I remember thinking,
no thanks.
Exactly. Right? I'll skip that chapter. I mean, really hope in wilderness anyway. It was maybe one of them. Hope in grief anyway. Talk about those kinds of chapters that you wrote that have some of those words that we really do want to skip over.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think this book is most essentially for the person who has found themselves in some kind of loss and they're trying to find where hope exists. I think it could be for a number of different people, but I think the core heart audience is the person who has gone through something and it's like, I don't know where I can find hope now after living through this thing. And so I think what I'm trying to articulate is that in the places we don't want to go, in the broken places, in the dark places, in the desolate places, God is there. And God is there maybe even more tangibly than we feel in these other sort of riding high, easygoing places. And I don't wish it upon, I put this in the introduction of the book, or the first chapter, I don't wish a difficult experience on anyone, but you talk to people who have gone through hard things, who have gone through the darkness, and they'll tell you, I don't wish that happened, but I would not change who I've become as a result. And I think part of that is because we meet up with God and we meet up with our people and we meet up with ourselves in ways we never would have had that not happened. Do you agree?
Oh, 100%. Because I'm sitting here thinking, you know, I needed to kind of find a new way for me to experience play this summer when I had a fall. Podcast listeners are aware of that. Yes. So I just needed to change things up. And so what was play going to be for me? And I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast, but Mike and I moved from Chicagoland to Sarasota almost, we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of that. And I had about 6-7, I don't know, bins of art and craft supplies. And we moved using pods and toured. Yeah. So these supplies were just sitting there. Everything else had been loaded. And Mike and I are not big arguers or fighters at all, but this was one of those interesting times. Mike said, "You don't need this stuff." Anita said, "Yes, I do. Absolutely.
Step back."
Because there's no room for this. And I said, "We will squeeze this in." And we squeezed it in. But listen to this. I didn't know. I mean, I really doubted. I can't believe I stood my ground. And I kind of thought Mike might be right. Because we were here 4¾ years before Anita pulls the bins out. I've pulled all this junk out now. Yeah. And my kitchen table is loaded. I hate mess. And Mike knows this. You know, if something's left out of place, that he leaves out of place, I'm like, where does that go? And I have said several times, thank you for being okay with my mess. Aww, he goes, well, yeah. He goes, I'm not the one. You're the one that has to be okay with it, which it's been good for me. So, but I didn't know when I would use, when I would need, and you know,
yeah.
God knew, and I pressed to get those things in the pods.
Good for you. Good for you. There was a conviction in there for a reason. But you know, it makes me think, Anita, of the Barbara Brown Taylor quote from her beautiful book, Learning to Walk in the Dark. And she says this, and I actually include this in the book as well, because it has been, these words have been just like a pillar to me in this throughout the last few years. She says, new life starts in the dark, whether it's a seed in the ground, a baby in the womb, or Jesus in the tomb. New life starts in the dark. And that's what you're like, those bins were there and they were available to you, but it was going through the darkness of your injury that gave you a new way of thinking about your life and play and what you needed that brought those bins back to you, you know? And so I think that that's a microcosm of what we're talking about, that no one wants the darkness. But
no.
Sometimes the darkness creates wings.
Oh, totally. And I almost forgot the point of the story. I got caught up in just getting the bins here. Well, what I've been doing, I've been working on a collage that is, I've got this face with a little talk bubble that says, I am.
Mm.
Who am I? Who am I now? Who am I post a big career in radio? Who am I post an accident that kind of split me open in more ways than one?
Yeah, sure.
You know, who am I living through the pandemic? So I'm asking this, you know, you can ask yourself these same questions. What am I going to hope in? Right.
Yeah.
So opening up this art stuff and starting to collage who I am. And I, in my notes in my phone, I've written down all these words. And I said, none of these are going to be negative words. I've got plenty of critic and self-critic in me. Don't we all? None of them are going to be those words. And so, wow, that's been kind of daunting and kind of fun to work on this collage.
So it's new life coming out of the darkness, right?
Yes,
and you can
absolutely.
So maybe your brain is not going to be perfectly put back together because of this accident. You're not going to get the outcome maybe that you would have wanted, but you can see along the way, the things you can invest in that will save you, that will be a companion to you. And this is what I'm trying to bring to readers, this exact story that you can hope anyway, even though the hard thing has happened. You know, I love this quote. I heard this yesterday from Kate Bowler, a beautiful writer and theologian.
Yes.
And she had had colon cancer, right?
Yes.
And so she says, I'm interested in having a conversation about how do we move forward with lives we didn't choose?
Oh.
Man. And I thought, if it gives me the chills, because
yeah.
I think more than not, many of us are living lives we didn't choose about something, a wayward child, a financial downturn, having to move out of a beloved community. How do we move forward with lives? An injury, a divorce. And so again, I feel like this is just another way of getting at what we're talking about. If the listener
Absolutely.
Is listening and saying, how do I, you know, a year after my marriage ended, one of my very dear friends, her husband died from cancer, a very aggressive cancer, very unexpectedly. And she's asking that same question, you know, how do we move forward with lives we didn't choose? And I think one of the small things I can say in response to that question is we find out what is worthy of investing our hope in. And maybe it's something as random as an art bin.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
Four, five, or six art bins.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, this also makes me think, because when you said that quote, which I quickly wrote down, so good. How do we move forward with lives we didn't choose? Often that's the impetus behind someone deciding, I need to see a spiritual director,
yes.
or I need to go to a counselor. So my deep prayer, and Larry Crabb's passed away this past year in the last few months, but his deep prayer was that the body of Christ, that the church would be that for each other, that we wouldn't necessarily need spiritual directors or, you know, I think therapists are there and we need them. But so how can we become coming out of these things that break us open? How can we become people to walk alongside other people and help them become the people that will then walk alongside others who will be, in the words of Henry Nouwen, wounded healers? Ooh. That's what we are.
It's so good. You know, the story that comes to mind for me, I think about this story a lot, is the friends that are taking their friend who can't walk to Jesus. And they get him on the stretcher and they get to we're going to take you and we're going to get you to Jesus and you're going to get healed. And it's going to be amazing. Let's all go. Great. Gung ho. And they get there and the room is packed and they can't get him in. So they say, okay, well, this is what we're going to do now. We're going to go up to the top of the roof and we're going to saw a hole in the roof and we're going to lower you down. I mean, just the story in and of itself is like, oh, that's so cool. Think about being that guy on the stretcher who can't walk and who is getting hauled up to a roof to be lowered down through a roof into a throng of people. And
maybe halfway falling off the pallet on the way up.
Who knows?
Imagine, right?
Yeah. Like you're on a roller coaster, right? And you're nothing you can do about it. Yeah. And I think about in that story, who do I want to be? I want to be one of the friends that says, I'm the hero. I came up with this super creative, cool, innovative idea to help this other person, you know, but I don't want to be the guy that's on the stretcher. That's the last person I want to be in that story. And after spending 4 years, the last 4 years being the person on the stretcher, I honestly actually think, Anita, this is where we have to start.
Yes.
That we have to acknowledge and accept that sometimes we're the person on the stretcher and we have to be vulnerable with the right people, and allow them to come around us and help us. And sometimes help doesn't come to us in the ways, I mean, I don't know if that guy wanted to be lowered through the roof. I think he probably wanted to just be walked through the front door, you know, but his friend said, this is what we're going to do. And again, you have to balance this whole thing. I mean, there are toxic people and all of this, right? I understand that. But in general, can we find those four people that we can trust?
Yes.
And can we trust them and say, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. Healing is not perfect, but I'm going to allow myself to be helped and seen, and I'm going to receive the love of other people. And I think when we're able to do that, it creates actual real community and reciprocity in our relationships, mutuality in our relationships, right? So this is what comes to mind when I think of true community. I think it's not a bunch of people that are all on the equal playing field sitting around a table, like just batting great ideas back and forth. It's about need, you know? And so that's part of it for me.
Well, and I loved your point. You know, will you let yourself be on the stretcher, you know? And then will you in due season become a stretcher bearer?
Yep.
You know, once you have had the healing needed, et cetera.
Yeah.
I was sitting across the table from lunch, having sushi with a friend one day, and she hands me something. And she said, you need to know that you're one of my four. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? She said, you're one of my four stretcher bearers. I'm like, oh,
wow. That is beautiful. That is beautiful.
And I hadn't thought about having that list myself, you know, and it was so meaningful. And then another story, a friend over coffee, a new friend. I mean, it was actually our first coffee. This is so interesting. We were just laughing about this because she said, I can't believe I said this. She looked me in the eye and she said, this has to be mutual.
Oh, good for her. That was vulnerable.
That was totally vulnerable. And I so appreciated it. And I needed that to be said, actually. Sometimes, you know, spiritual director, whatever, personality profile, you can always be giving the counsel or whatever it is. I'm like, no, I need this to be mutual. Thank you.
Yeah, that's so good. Like, let's define the relationship right now, right? Let's have a DTR and I need, yes, that's so good. And sometimes we need to pay someone and it doesn't, we don't want it to be mutual, right? Like, I don't want to know how your kids are doing. I just want you to help me. But then there's times where we don't want that. And I think also coming out of church culture, if you've been a leader at church, that often is like a code language for you don't have to be vulnerable. You get to be the one with all the answers. And I think we're also trying to change that kind of mindset and culture a little bit. Like, this mutuality is important. I love that story. That good for her. I love that.
Yeah.
I think too, like that. Yeah, I love that. I think too, sometimes when we're walking with people that are struggling, it is very hard to know what to say, what to do, how to help. And I remember this is so simple, but it was so meaningful to me. At the time when my divorce situation was its most acute and new, I was living on the West Coast and my sister was living on the East Coast, and we're close, but we were a million miles away from each other. And she would time it on my time zone when I would get in line at the pickup line for my kids at school. And I'd be kind of sitting there for about 15 minutes and she'd just send me a text and she'd just say this, checking in, dot, dot, dot. And I could choose at that moment if I wanted to just call her and rant, if I wanted to write back and say, can't talk now, if I wanted to write back and say, it's really hard today, can you kind of like remember me in your heart and in your prayers? I could choose how much I wanted to say, but she was always there checking in like every day. And I think what I loved about that is it was never offering a solution, never simplifying or oversimplifying what I was going through, no solving, no advice, just that was her way of saying, I am here. Yeah. And it was one of the most meaningful gestures of that whole experience. And I don't even know how she came up with that, but I feel like that's something I want to offer to listeners that sometimes we don't know what to do, but just saying, checking in can be a game changer.
Oh, and I love your story. You know, a million miles away, what I was jumping up and down in my heart saying was, three time zones away, Eastern to Pacific. That is no small thing, because my dear friend and former co-host of the old radio show that I did moved to California and I'm in Florida. So this time zone thing, I'm grateful for Marco Polo. I'm grateful for texts.
Yes.
And it's just so good. And I, God bless her, I've been making my junky art and sticking it in envelopes and sending it to her as postcards or whatever. That. And she's like, this is wonderful, even if it's not, you know, it's all
I love that.
Just an encouragement. She's sending things, cards to me and all, you know, I love that about your sister, not solving, no words of advice, you know, just presence, really. That's what you're saying. And presence can be X amount of time zones away or half a world away. You can still be present. You find creative ways to do it.
That's exactly right. And it really doesn't sound like much when you explain it, but I can't tell you how it just felt like she was right with me during all of that. And so, you know, I want to offer that because sometimes we get overwhelmed, you know, when it's not us, but it's someone that we love who's going through these hard breakings, and that can be a way that they know that someone's holding hope for them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I wanted to ask you, and I know we're moving toward the end of our conversation, but you know, since I listened on audiobook, I got the hard copy after because I'm like, but I've got stuff I want to underline. And so now I'm the day that the hard copy came, I had just listened to the chapter Hope in the Wilderness anyway. Mm-hmm. And I was so glad the hard copy arrived because I kept saying to myself, chapter 20, remember, go in and open to chapter 20. And I did. And I kept underlining, you are not consumed. Mm-hmm. You are not consumed. And I sent that actually to a friend. But I needed it too. You know, it's interesting, the things we send to other people are often just as much messages for ourselves. But let's talk a little bit about hope in the wilderness, maybe as our as we wrap things up here, because I think many of us are in the wilderness. I mean, we've alluded already to the pandemic and all kinds of other things that are fallout from that, the losses that have been fallout from that. Talk about that chapter, about what that meant to you.
Yeah, the wilderness for me, I also call it the messy middle in that chapter. And I think what we fail to sometimes give a lot of weight to is that, you know, when a tragedy happens, the beginning is really hard, but then there's this stretch that's a really messy middle. And mine went on, and there wasn't closure for a long time. And it stretched out interminably like a wilderness. Like, I don't know when this is going to end. And I don't know the resources that I'm going to need to get through it. And but what I see, and certainly this is a ancient narrative of the wilderness, right? It's the children of Israel. And they didn't like it either. What did they say? At least back in Egypt, at least in slavery, we knew where our meal was coming from, right? Which we're like, oh my gosh, how ungrateful. And we do it too. It's not even about gratitude. Right. I don't even know if it's about gratitude as much as it is just, it's very difficult to be in the unknown. And we are in the unknown and we have been chronically. So I was in the unknown. I had a few things I could hold in terms of, okay, we moved from the West Coast to the East Coast, but I didn't know for sure where we were going to be living long-term. I didn't know how a lot of our circumstances were going to resolve. And so I kind of akin that to being in the wilderness. And then that scripture you referred to, Lamentations, it's from Lamentations 3. And many of us that have a background with the Bible or a Christian background, we maybe know the part that comes later, which is, your mercies are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. But what comes right before that passage, which is not as often quoted, is these words, because of God's great love, we are not consumed. And I have held onto that with both hands, Anita, because there are times in that wilderness and that messy middle. And I know you know this too, you know, the messy middle of healing. It can go on and on and on and on, and you don't know where you're going to end up. In that messy middle, the unknown, it can feel incredibly consuming. It feels like I'm going to be buried by this, that my circumstances are going to define me, and that I'm going to be buried by my circumstances forever. And what I just, it's still to this day, just really, it makes me choke up because it's not just that you won't be consumed, but it's because of God's great love for you. And I take that to mean too, that there is something inside of you, listener, Anita, Leanna, there's something inside of you that your circumstances can never take from you. And so I think that was something that I just came back to over and over. This feels consuming, but God has reminded me in his words that through his love, I can never be consumed. I can never, the essence, the true Leanna, the divine spark that is in me can never truly be consumed.
And you end that chapter with the question, God, what do you want to say to me about you are not consumed? Because we each get to answer that in our own way with our own stuff that's happening in our own lives.
How do you feel consumed right now? What is consuming you? What is consuming your mind and your nervous system and your body and your fears and your dreams and your desire, all the positive, what's consuming you, you know? And God is saying, you are not to be lived consumed. You're not going to be consumed by your circumstances. Yeah. So I have held on to that. And I hope that's meaningful to someone else because it has really carried me.
Guaranteed it is. Well, I cannot recommend Hope Anyway enough. I am a huge fan of your writing. I have been for a long time and always love to have you on the podcast. You're a great conversationalist and that lights my fire always too. So thank you so much. Aww. I really appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. I always love talking with you too. I love how you weave in the ancient writers and the mystics and the in your spiritual direction practice. It's always so rich, Anita. So thank you for having me and congratulations again on your 6-year anniversary. It's just fabulous.
And as always, I say to everyone, keep the conversation going.